We would like to begin this podcast by acknowledging that the land on which we record is the occupied, traditional, and unceded territory of the Stalo First Nation.
And there is a lot to care about. I mean, we got like a war happening between Russia, Ukraine, Israel, Gaza. There's a lot to be paying attention to there. And so as news, our job is to follow what's new. I understand that. But I also think that there's a responsibility to follow up on the stories that I don't want to say take advantage of, but we jump into this moment of time to tell people about history. But if we don't go back to check on the people that are affected by that, then I think we've lost the plot in some ways.
Welcome to the Ending Poverty Together podcast. I'm Shalane, and we're here to discuss big questions about poverty in bite-sized ways. Molly Thomas is the host of TVO's newest show, Big, If True, which exposes disinformation and misinformation in everyday life. She is an award-winning anchor, correspondent, and producer who has worked for all three major networks in Canada. In 2023, she received the Michener Deacon Fellowship from Canada's Governor General for her pitch on the loss of school for Afghan women and girls. Her three-part podcast series, Dear Taliban, is now out. As a reporter, her commitment to social justice stories has taken her to 12 countries, mostly fragile contexts. In her spare time, Molly teaches Zumba, MCs various charitable events, and is always up for a competitive game of basketball. Welcome to the podcast, Molly.
It's so nice to be here. Yes, I love activities. So you put me into something active, I'll probably be there.
Okay, that's great. Well, Molly, I know that introduction actually really just touches on your career and the work that you've done. So I would love to start with just hearing from you why you have chosen this particular career path.
You know, journalism was always appealing to me because I love to talk to people. Shalane, like the core of journalism is talking and listening to people. And, you know, I wasn't really good at math. There's a lot of journalists that are good at math. I wasn't great at math and science. So I was like, what am I good at? So I think, you know, the public speaking, the being in front of people, being able to talk to anyone from any background, those things were all appealing to me about journalism for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think as I aged and got older, you know, seeing the stories that were not covered, seeing the voices that were not getting exposure was definitely something that was on my mind of, this is important. And I think this is a part of my path.
Okay. And where has that taken you? You know, you talk about stories that aren't being told, and yet you have told a lot of stories. So what are some of the stories that you've told, and why those particular stories?
I think over my journey as a journalist, which has been 15 years now, crazy to think, you know, I've had a love for the world, so fascinated by the world that we live in. You know, my parents, when we were young, were really big on travel, and they would take us around the world, but they would take us to some of the nicest places. Like you'd see the Taj Mahal, that's where my family, you know, background's from, but they'd also walk us through the slums.
Okay.
Very intentionally. Mm. And so as little kids, you know, we would see children that looked exactly like us and they would walk us through and they would say, you know, like, there's no difference between you and these children. Mm. The only difference is you are born in a country with more opportunities, more resources, more of everything. And so what are you going to do about that? And I think that's pretty foundational to my life, my siblings' lives, to how we look at the world and how we look at our work. How do we engage the world, and especially the people that people forget about? Because you go to India, you go to the Taj Mahal, everyone goes to the Taj Mahal.
Sure.
But like, what about like the least of these, the people that people forget about? And I think that is it's been a big part of my career for sure.
Wow, that really speaks to a parenting issue of being very intentional of helping children understand the world and be exposed to other parts of the world that a lot of times we, like you said, we just avoid.
And people want it. Kids want it too. Like, they're curious. Yes. They want to know. And I think there's great opportunities for people to take their children in safe manners, but also show them the reality, allow them to ask questions, and allow them to be ready for a world that is global.
Right.
Whether we like it or not, no matter how much we try to pare into our own countries, our own provinces, our own spaces, like, no, we live in a world that is connected. Mm-hmm. And the more that we know that from a younger age, the more we can have impact.
Mm-hmm. So you had that foundation at a very young age. Then what? Were there some other key moments that helped you really solidify that not only you wanted to be a journalist, but you wanted to cover a certain kind of story?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I've always wanted to be on TV. I think, you know, there's the draw of TV, right? The lights and the makeup and all that fun stuff. And that is a part of it.
Sure.
I think for me, you know, I grew in my faith in my early 20s. Mm. And for me, that was a game changer for me. Because mm-hmm. now I started to see the world not only as, okay, what can I get from this beautiful big TV set? What is my responsibility in journalism? And that shifted drastically. And so I would say that happened, you know, in my years in university. Mm-hmm. And so as I was starting journalism, you know, I started to have eyes for poverty around the world, which I will say, even though my parents exposed me to those things at a young age, Shalane, I didn't get it at that time. Like I found those parts. I didn't want to be in those areas. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to go to those places. I did not understand it until much later in life when that intersected with my faith and what I feel is like my calling in life. So that only came out later on in my 20s where I actually had to sit with that and say, what is my responsibility with this background, with this exposure that I have? So while I've kind of worked in different places in the country, you know, whether it's at a city level or provincial level, national level, I've always pushed for like, let's go to Haiti after the earthquake. Like, let's go follow up and see what happened to those people. And I remember, you know, news directors in Saskatchewan, some people saying like, well, why do you think Saskatchewan people care about this? And I'm like, we have to make them care about things. Like, I think as journalists, like our job is not to tell people what to think, but we have a huge responsibility in what to think about. We present information to them to sit with and to decipher and to mull on, to talk to their friends with, to expand their worldviews. And so I think I've just taken that into my career at every level. And so I've had to, you know, really battle for those stories to get to those 12 countries. And every single time, every single time, those stories have made impacts on the communities, no matter how small they are. And so it shows me that people care.
Right.
You just have to be able to bridge that for them of the world that exists on the other side of the world. I'll give you an example. You know, I went to Somalia in 2017. At that time, people know Somalia from the 90s with the you know, terrible famine that devastated and just killed children en masse. In 2017, there was fear that that was going to happen again. The drought was so bad out there. And so I said, let's get ahead of it. Let's go do some stories on the front end. And so we went and I was out there. Like I grew up in the prairies. I grew up in Saskatchewan.
Okay.
I'm looking at these fields and they are barren and there is nothing. And all I can look around and think is like, this is exactly like home. It's like if this happened in Saskatchewan, it would be absolutely devastating.
Right.
And so, you know, you take that perspective and you go to small and you see it and you bring it back for people and you show them like this is just like Saskatchewan. And then it starts to click. Right. So the more you can connect these experiences and your exposure that you've had,
right,
the more you can connect in with people. And so I don't think we're that far from most of the world. We just have to know how to share those stories.
Yes. There was a quote that something you shared in the Dear Taliban podcast series that you've recently released. You said, and I'm paraphrasing, there are the stories that months or years after people forget. And I really have a problem with that in journalism. And then you went on to say, in news, we hit things and we don't go back. And so that has been my most annoying trait. I don't let things go.
Yeah, I'm that girl.
You're that girl.
The news director's like, oh, here she comes. What's her pitch today?
Yeah. But what I'm curious to hear from you is how does media hitting things and not going back affect the most vulnerable people, the marginalized in the world?
It's a huge problem. You know, I experienced that with Dear Taliban. You know, I had the biggest fellowship in journalism in the country. And if people listen to that podcast, they'll get a little bit of my story of kind of the predicament I was stuck in because I just lost my job at a major network. And I had this huge story in front of me in one of the most dangerous and volatile places in the world and specifically terrible for women. And as a brown woman, it also changes things because I have even less authority in those spaces. So yeah, it was, you know, it's one of those worlds. Like you're like, what do I do? And then you're going to mainstream, you know, media organizations with all this background experience of being around the world, you know, mm-hmm. the biggest fellowship, and people are still not interested. Now, I attribute that to different things. Like there's a lot of things going on. The media in Canada and around the world is struggling. You know, we are in a very dynamic time in terms of technology and innovation. But, you know, I grew up as a TV reporter, TV anchor. You know, how many people my age have cable?
Yes, exactly.
Not many.
Right.
Not many. So that transition of us working to create content for my parents' generation, that still exists, is still there. But at the same time, the challenge of the digital revolution, you know, we haven't really figured it fully out. And so media companies are bleeding money and there isn't a lot of extra money. Oftentimes, you know, if you think of even 30, 40 years ago in media, you'd have correspondents around the world.
Right. Yes.
Right. You want to go and get a story, you know, in China, there's a correspondent in Beijing. But take a look, like in Canada, take a look. The network I worked for, you know, CTV, in the cuts that were made, you know, got rid of every foreign correspondent outside of Washington, D.C.
I did not know that. Interesting. Okay.
Right. So, and even at that time, you know, we used to have Jerusalem, there used to be Beijing, there used to be, you know, people, London, all of that closed.
Right. Right.
And so your eyes on the world change. And while you can get feeds, we get feeds, you know, from different affiliates that help us understand what's happening. It's just not the same as having people on the ground that are able to give you like the cultural context and all of the nuance that's important to understanding a global world and how we're connected to it. So, you know, like these things matter.
Right.
Because they're bleeding money. And so when it comes to like specialized stories like mine that say, it's not just the news of the day, let's dig deeper into this. You have to pay for that content. And the freelance budgets are real small. So that's one problem. And I think the other problem, I think there's an apathy. I think that news is moving so fast. Tech is moving so fast. And there is a lot to care about. I mean, we got like a war happening between Russia, Ukraine, Israel, Gaza. There's a lot to be paying attention to there. And so as news, our job is to follow what's new. I understand that. But I also think that there's a responsibility to follow up on the stories that we, I don't want to say take advantage of, but we jump into this moment of time to tell people about history. But if we don't go back to check on the people that are affected by that, then I think we've lost the plot in some ways. And so that's why, you know, I've really dedicated time to applying for fellowships, to applying for outside funding, when I believe that a story is that important, because you're not going to get the green light necessarily in your media organization.
Right.
Because there's so much going on. The staff is low. How much time do they have to dedicate? How much money? And so, yeah, there is poverty in the media itself, and there's poverty in the media mindset, right? Like, you don't have everyone in your newsroom having a globalized mindset. You don't have everybody having the privilege of being able to go out and travel the world and see things. And so it's your job to bring that into the team, but it can be hard, you know, because everyone's, you know, balancing budgets.
For sure. Yeah. Now, one of those stories that you fought hard to go back, and you've referred to it already, the fellowship, the award that you received, and then you were able to go and do this in-depth work on education with women and girls in Afghanistan. I should probably say lack of education and lack of opportunities for them. How has that changed you? What have you learned from this? And what do we need to know as Canadians about that situation? Because honestly, if I'm watching the news, whether it's cable or digital or whatever, I'm not seeing stories about that day to day.
For sure. For sure. I mean, everyone will remember Afghanistan because our soldiers went over there and spent, you know, years, over a decade, boots on the ground. You know, we have people that died for our country to fight for some basic human rights in Afghanistan. Obviously, that's not the world that exists today. The Taliban took over years ago. And with that came, you know, just those biting restrictions for women. Like, just, it's horrific. I mean, yes, there's millions of girls that are out of the classroom, not allowed to go to school anytime beyond the age of grade six. But it is so much worse than that, Shalane. I mean, there, it feels like every couple months, there's a new decree that comes out from the Taliban restricting women. And so everything from, you know, women can't even stand by a window in their home because they might be seen. So the window needs to be closed. When you go outside, you have to be fully covered in a full burqa. That means your eyes are even closed. The eyes, the parts of your soul that people can see into. Like, there is an erasure of females and women happening in that in that country that Canada is so closely tied to, whether we like it or not. I'm not going to talk about whether we should have got involved or not got involved. We were involved.
Right.
We were involved. And so when we look at what happens to that country, it's not like we can just detach and say it doesn't matter. You know, like I've talked to soldiers that are so heartbroken. You know, they were part of sometimes building schools.
Right.
Of seeing girls for the first generation go to school. And, you know, all of that feels like it's lost now. And yeah, I just can't imagine. Like, I talk to girls in Afghanistan who are so depressed and suicidal and just giving up on hope. And I think the bare minimum that we can do on this side of the world is be in the know of what is happening in one of the most repressive places to women on the planet.
And how do you see that potentially making a difference? I mean, we in Canada, when these restrictions are in place, how does knowing that this is happening, how is that going to affect change? Because it does at times feel hopeless, I think.
It does, for sure, for sure. I think we all have our different roles, right? I think as a journalist, my job is to, you know, bring awareness to something. You know, there's people working at the International Criminal Court to bring gender apartheid, some checks and balances for the Taliban and what international sanctions can be at play when they put in these kinds of restrictions, right? On a personal level of someone just sitting at home listening to the stories, you know, my podcast went out and I got contacted by a random group of young people, all under the age of 30, that were like, how do we sponsor Marwa into this country? How do we get her out of South Asia? So if you listen to my podcast, it's the most dire story. And so I'm connected to this group of young people who have no tie to anything other than, you know, their grandparents were Holocaust survivors and somebody was a refugee that brought them here. And so we started talking and it, you know, like there's a group that, you know, has potential. We actually found another route, government route, hopefully for Marwa. But here's, you know, people are ready to be engaged. You have to give them something to be engaged in. And there's all kinds of different ways. I mean, there's universities that are doing scholarships for Afghan girls. There are organizations like Right to Learn Afghanistan, which are providing digital services so that girls can still learn online. Like, you can support those, right? We're all trying to find places that we donate and give money to, you know, for our own tax purposes and to, like, make the world better, hopefully.
Right.
And so, you know, you can, if you know about these issues, you know, like, this is, if female education is important to you, you can start investing in places that are purposefully trying to help, right? So I think there's so many different ways in which we can be involved, but exposure, yeah, is the first part because you just need to know the story first.
This, you've mentioned this a couple times. I would really encourage you, if you're listening today, to find the Dear Taliban podcast series and listen to it because I know I was deeply moved in hearing your experience. I also just have to say, Molly, you are one brave woman.
My family calls it crazy, so that's a nice rephrase. I'll take it. I think God built me this way, and I think there's a purpose and reason for that. And yeah, so I just, you know, I'm not too scared of the world. I think people are often misunderstood. I think places that we see as scary are often just not contextualized. I think we should talk to more people and we wouldn't be as worried about the world. There are things to worry about, but there's also just like being a human being.
And if we don't have people like you who are willing to take some of these things that I understand your mother thinks are crazy risks, from hearing some
My poor mom.
But I really appreciate what you just shared about if we don't know, we can't support. And if we don't know, we don't know how to support. So some of that exposure, because you're willing to go and take some of those risks. What are some of the other stories that have really deeply impacted you where you've seen marginalized, vulnerable people receive some attention that has actually affected change?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. It's like you're trying to think through your Rolodex and stories over the years.
Right.
I think, you know, I did a lot of work on, actually in Canada, on migrant workers. So people that are employed, you know, on farms, they do the jobs that many Canadians don't want to do for minimum wage, to be honest. But it's oftentimes a lifeline for people coming here to support their families back home. And just, you know, the lack of rights for those people, the lack of opportunity when some of them, you know, spend 10 months of their 12 months of the year here away from their families. And there's, you know, I always question, like, there's no pathway to citizenship. There's no pathway to like, you know, you, like, I've met people that have spent 25 years in Canada working, giving all that time away from their families. And
there's,
you know,
there's no pathway to citizenship for them.
Not for the temporary workers right now. And so that's something that advocates have pushed for, because if you have permanent residence, you have more rights in Canada. You have better access to everything else that we can't really take for granted. So, you know, it unfortunately in situations like that, then, you know, some people, not everyone, there's like also great employers in Canada who have migrant workers and who have a great relationship. But some people, you know, take advantage of those people.
Sure.
And because those jobs are so valuable, like they are literally feeding mouths back home, you're not going to say anything. And we saw that during COVID, right? Like, you know, a lot of these men and women, different things, but I was doing with farm work, mostly men, you know, were in bunkhouses. And so when COVID broke out, you know, we were all told to isolate. How do you isolate when you're in a sharing a bunk bed with like, and there's like 10 people, 10 bunk beds in a room.
Right.
And then what precautions were put in place? It's like, well, the rest of the country is isolating, but like these people were left to fend for themselves. Well, people died. So I think we need to always keep, you know, those things in mind, and are we caring for even the most vulnerable that are on our soil?
And to be able to tell those stories and to be able to draw attention to that, and then to see people starting to advocate for these individuals.
Absolutely. And that W5 story I had done, the migrant story, the farm was actually like held up, I'm trying to remember, in a tribunal after and fined like 25,000 or something like that. Like there actually was, for one of the first times,
there was some action.
Some justice, you know, for people.
Sure.
It's, it, you know, the justice is never enough when you lose lives. But I think it's more of a moral win of saying, hey, like something went wrong here and we need to do better for people that come to our country and, you know, put food on our tables. So I'm not the only one that contributed to that story. Many different journalists in the country, you know, were a part of telling the migrant story during COVID. But I have seen some promising small developments, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see long-term if actual policies will change. But some of this stuff is the long game, right? It's like you have to win hearts and minds first. You have to win Canadians to understand what's actually happening in their backyard so that they can advocate. Like my job as a journalist is just to show you facts and information and to expose you. And then it's the Canadian, you know, the collective Canadians that say this is important enough to push for.
Coming back to exactly what you were talking about before, there's also that need to go back to the stories. It's not a one-off story. If you're going to change the mindset of a country, then there has to be this return to the story so that people can recognize the significance and then become more involved.
For sure. And I understand, you know, I'm sure people listening are thinking like, I can't be on top of every story. You don't have to be. I think you have to figure out in your life, like what moves you? Like what bothers you when you see it? You know, is it girls' education or the lack thereof? Is it, you know, like the migrant workers that are out there? Like what is it when you see it or see a headline or you see a, you know, a post on Instagram that really bothers your spirit? Ask yourself why. And maybe that's a place that you should be investing, whether that's time, money, volunteer, advocacy. I just think as Canadians, we should be thinking about it all the time because we're in a country that, you know, while it has its own challenges, is still, in comparison to the rest of the world, a pretty great place to be.
It's pretty clear to me in this conversation that your why is solidly impressed in your mind and you have a strong why for the things that you do. I'm curious, what's your why in your latest endeavor, the Big If True series?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I just wrapped up that Afghanistan fellowship, and I, you know, which was so focused on education when this TBO job presented itself. And for people that don't know about TV Ontario, you know, its main mandate is education. So if you think about, you know, from the Afghan girls on education, and I've done a lot of work on the lack of education for people around the world over my years. Like, it just is something that keeps coming back. Syria, you know, the lost scholars with the war there was a big focus for me for many years. And my master's focused on Syrian refugees. And so I, you know, have a probably like a inclination already that way. And then the TVO opportunity came up, and it's, you know, it's all about misinformation and disinformation, scams, hoaxes, which really, you know, in today's day and world, when I'm looking at, you know, disinformation, misinformation flying at us, so much coming at us, a lot of, you know, we need to re-educate ourselves. I need to re-educate myself. And that's going to be a constant process because the technology is so good. The deepfake technology that exists out there, the AI technology that exists, you know, which can be used for great things, but can also be used exceptionally to deceive. We just did a show on crypto scams, you know, people, you know, hoping to invest their hard-earned money and just getting ripped off, like just ruining their lives. So I think, you know, what was appealing to me was the education side, but also like, how can we all re-educate ourselves, get some tips and tools in the toolbox so that we learn how to deal with this crazy world that exists. It's not going anywhere. And we all need a little help, myself included.
For people who haven't heard of it, I'm based in BC. So TV Ontario isn't something that gets a lot of press out here. Where can people find you? Where can people find the show and then also the Dear Taliban series?
Yeah, so Dear Taliban, you can find anywhere you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, wherever that is. You can also just Google it. You'll find Canada Land has posted that three-part series. And then as well, for TVO, I mean, we have, we air on Sunday nights if people are listening in Ontario. But we also have a full YouTube presence. So at Big If True TVO, we have a full website. If you want to watch the show from top to bottom, you can just look on the website itself. Let's just Google Big If True TVO. We have social media presence on Instagram, my own TikTok at Molly Thomas TV. And so we're always putting out content. And we love when people engage with us or ask questions or, you know, tell us a show that they are interested in seeing. So we are essentially, you know, TVO is a station that's been around, but this show is like a startup. We are very much in startup mode. And so there's a lot of trying things, throwing them at the wall. Does this work? Is this helping people? What can we do better? And so it's a great time for people to, you know, jump in because people don't have, Shalane, they don't have the time to weed through, you know, is this true? Oh, you hear so something, true. You hear, you know, it's so difficult. It's like, I don't know, like our team, you know, we, that's what we're doing. And so hopefully some of those, you know, giving context to some of the words. I mean, we have a president in the United States that, you know, loves to misinform, disinform at the worst cases, right? And so we are constantly battling, like, how do we help people understand even some of the tactics at play when things are just not true? And I think about, you know, we're talking about the vulnerable groups of people. I was thinking about, I mean, cuts to U.S. aid. Like, massively will disrupt so many people around the world, you know, cuts to vaccines that I saw, you know, could kill a million of the most vulnerable this week. Like, wow, this is so wild, the world that we're in, you know, where North America has stood as kind of a beacon of like justice, you know, not always, not always, but in terms of the money that we give from governments from the Western world have been people that are generous and believe in a globalized world where we can help one another, I think we're taking dangerous, you know, steps backwards. And people need to be informed about what that actually means and what the fallout of those decisions are.
I feel like we could carry on and have a conversation for another hour, but our time is coming to a close. Molly, is there anything that you were hoping to share today that I haven't asked you about? Is there anything else that comes to mind that you'd like to wrap up with?
I think for people, listen, I think we're in a, you know, a world that is wacky right now. And with social media and all the algorithms that are coming at us, we all are going to need a little help to navigate what's like true, what's not out there. Hopefully we can do that on our show, Big If True. And then in terms of like, you know, in the midst of that noise, I think we should all collectively think about like what are the things that we want to invest in as Canadians? Like, what are the values that we believe are worth it for other people? I think that oftentimes this whole social media world, the selfie world, we're so focused on ourselves. It's all about us. It's all about what's happening in our lives. Like, I think that this is just, you know, my own thoughts, but like, as I work with young people, I teach Zumba, you know, those kinds of things. Right. I'm like, you know, I think the more we think less of ourselves and the more about other people, the more fulfilled lives we're going to have. And so I think that, you know, as we think about vulnerable communities, as we think of policies that are coming down from around the world that are changing, even the Canada, the US, the Europe dynamic that we know, let's think like, what's that passion for each of us, you know? And what is that thing that we want to invest in, whether it's locally, nationally, or globally?
Well, thank you so much. I know you have a very busy life, very busy schedule, and yet you've taken time to be here today. And I really appreciate you. Thank you for the way that you are drawing attention to those of us who don't have the opportunity to travel and see these kind of situations firsthand. You're helping us to know what the issues are, and then also opening our eyes to ways that we can be involved and ways that we can make a difference. So thank you for your work, Molly, and thank you for being here.
Thanks, Jolene, for having me. It was fun.
If today's episode sparked questions for you, or if you'd like to learn more about Food for the Hungry, email me at podcast@fhcanada.org.